Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
Brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, this is Weekly Edition on the Mormon Channel. Here's your host, Kathy Aiken.
Despite a lifetime of accomplishment, a Latter-day Saint sculptor has completed his most valued work, the bust of President Thomas S. Monson. How his faith in God prepared him for this momentous task.
Even though I had all the measurements, the length of his ear, nose, and cheekbones and everything there, I was trying to capture what we all remember him at conference and how warm he is with people.
And what stories an old building can tell. A look back at one of the first tabernacles in the church.
After the saints arrived in the Salt Lake Valley, there was a movement among the general authorities of the church to create buildings which would be large enough for large congregations of Latter-day Saints to meet and to worship.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mormon Channel Weekly Edition, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. When you meet our first guest, Blair Buswell, you likely have no idea the works his hands have created. He's a simple man with a profound talent, whose works include everything from 30-foot statues of famous athletes to award-winning pieces of the American West to simple sculptures reminding us of life's simple beauties. But his most prized work is the likeness of the Prophet of God. Blair invited us into his studio recently to discuss this most important work and how he himself was molded into a man that could complete such a spectacular work. With the most minute changes and last-minute adjustments, Utah sculptor Blair Buswell captures the perfect image of his most important work of art, the bust of President Thomas S. Monson.
He has a twinkle in his eye, and so I was trying to get beyond just getting the eyes and the ears and the nose in the right place. I wanted to get that expression. I wanted to get the feeling of President Monson.
Buswell has always tried to capture what he sees with his eyes, then translate that to his hands. He loved to work with Play-Doh as a child, and by high school, people were taking serious notice of his work. Then something happened on his mission that cemented his love of clay. An art teacher in his Washington, D.C. area gave him a gift.
I can remember one Sunday, she came up to my companion and I after church, and she said she has something for us out in the car, which every missionary knows that's cakes, cookies, treats. So we were salivating as we were following her out to the car. She opens up her trunk and gives me 50 pounds of clay. It was Christmas for me in July, but my companion was really disappointed.
Buswell turned his gift into this, a bust of an old man he called Mr. Brown.
So I was so excited to get my hands back in the clay. I stayed up most of the night and made Mr. Brown.
Buswell would spend hours practicing his discussions on the bust, a creation he still has in his studio to this day. Then he got an idea. He would use his talent to sculpt lessons during mission firesides.
I was facing the audience and they weren't seeing what I was working on, and I would be working and talking about the apostasy and the restoration. And then at the end, I would turn the bust around, and it was the head of Christ. It was at that point where I could put my arm around Christ and say, thank you for this talent, this ability, and for the gospel.
Since his mission, Buswell has used his ability to the fullest, becoming one of the top sculptors in the country. He carves the busts for the NFL Hall of Fame, has created award-winning Western art, as well as statues of several famous actors and athletes. But his most recent work of President Monson is most special.
I went up and spent a day going through his scrapbooks, pulling out pictures that have that look I was looking for. Even though I had all the measurements, length of his ear, nose, and cheekbones and everything there, I was trying to capture what we all remember him at conference and how warm he is with people. He's just really great with people.
Buswell spent precious time with the prophet and having him pose in his studio. Sister Ann Dibb, the prophet's daughter and second counselor in the Young Women's General Presidency, escorted her father to the final session.
Ann came up next to me and just said, you captured my dad.
That's all you needed to hear.
Made my day.
Even better came the day the bust was to be placed in the conference center. President Monson asked to see it first, so Buswell took it to his office and placed it on his desk. After months of fine-tuning and nearly 30 years of training, he was about to get the most important critique of all.
He turned around and he said, "I know that guy."
Do you feel he was really pleased with it?
Yeah, seemed to be. I'm really glad, and looking back, that they gave me that call.
You can see the bust of President Thomas S. Monson each day in the Conference Center on Temple Square. Just check in at door 15, and the hosts will give you a tour. When we come back, a look back at one of the iconic tabernacles of our day.
Our world of biblical words. It's a great place to wander and wonder. Here are a couple of word phrases you may think you know. They appear in the Bible several times and they're pretty much synonymous. They're older English terms. The first is anon, and the second is by and by. Ever heard of them? If you read a lot of Shakespeare, you're certainly familiar with anon. They are both English terms that in 1611 meant immediately or at once. Remember, 1611 is the date that the translation of the King James Bible was published, so anon, or by and by at that time, would be synonymous with words like betimes, as in Doctrine and Covenants 1:21, or instantly, or presently. But we have to be careful with anon and by today because, in our common usage, they have both come to mean nearly the opposite, like a longer period of time. Well, by common usage, I mean we Americans have pretty much lost the word anon. Maybe the Brits and the Irish and the Scotch use anon, but we don't hear it much at all in North America. Well, to be specific, the word anon appears in Matthew 13:21, in the parable of the sower. But he that received the seed into stony places, the same is he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receiveth it. And in Mark 1:30 we read, "But Simon's wife's mother lay sick of a fever, and anon they tell him of her, and Jesus came and took her by the hand." In each case, a proper recognition of the term, as it was used back in the 1600s, is necessary in order to correctly understand the narrative. So just remember, back in the day of the King James translation, by and anon meant immediately. So there you have it. Anon and by. You've just enjoyed another segment of Our World of Biblical Words, Discoveries and Definitions.
Welcome back to Weekly Edition. In the early days of the church, there was a unique need for buildings that would accommodate the ever-growing large local congregations. Today, that need is filled by stake centers. But back then, the solution was to build tabernacles. The most famous is the Salt Lake Tabernacle on Temple Square. However, did you know there are dozens of other tabernacles scattered around the world? Today, we take you into the shadows of the Logan Temple to an equally beloved building, the Logan Tabernacle.
I'm Kenneth Godfrey, and we are in the Logan Tabernacle in Logan, Utah, a beautiful structure that dates way back to the early period in Utah's history. I have lived in the Logan area for almost 50 years, and this tabernacle has played a pivotal role in the history of Cache Valley, in the history of the church. After the saints arrived in the Salt Lake Valley, there was a movement among the general authorities of the church to create buildings which would be large enough for large congregations of Latter-day Saints to meet and to worship. So in 1864, Ezra T. Benson, a member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, he called a meeting of all of the important people in Cache Valley. They met together, and Ezra T. Benson said, "We need to build a tabernacle. There were more than 5,000 people residing in the Logan area at this time. So there were several individuals that made subscriptions on that very day saying they would aid in building this tabernacle. and construction started on it. And as they started to build the foundation, it was 60 by 106 feet. And then after a pretty good start, Brigham Young came and said, you need to extend it. So they extended it about 30 feet, widened it, and so it has its present dimensions. The rock that the outside walls are built from was quarried in the Green Canyon Quarry. That is hard rock. It's also the same rock that's used in the Logan Temple, which made it the kind of building that stood out. It's very conspicuous. As you drive into Logan, it's one of the first buildings that you see. Now, the saints in Cache Valley had to contribute their means for the building of this tabernacle. They also contributed their labor, so it was a great sacrifice, especially if you understand that they're building a temple at the same time. And that's why it took from 1864 to 1891 before it was finally completed and dedicated by Wilford Woodruff in 1891. Oddly enough, it's been used from the very first by other religions and for purposes other than religious purposes. The Utah State Legislature met here on one occasion. We've also had some of the world's greatest singers that have performed here. Some of the best musicians have been here. Now it's used in the last few years as a kind of community center. There are programs here all summer long, every day at noon. There have been pageants staged here, lectures, debates have all been held here, and it's been a valuable building for the community. As I've sat in this building and seen some of the young people in attendance that I've given patriarchal blessings to, I can remember distinctly having this great feeling of love come over me for every member of our stake. It's a wonderful building. Maybe you would like the benches to be just a bit more comfortable, but if you look around, you can see the beauty, and it gives you some idea of what perhaps we hope heaven looks like, that it will be a beautiful place. It will be a place also that carries with it a magnificent spirit. There are spiritual things that transpire here, faith-promoting things, and it gives a large group of church members a chance to get together, rub shoulders with each other, bear testimony to one another in a structure that is beautiful.
We'd like to thank historian Kenneth Godfrey for his insight into this most beloved building. If you have not had a chance, we invite you to visit the many pioneer tabernacles still standing in the world today. You will not be disappointed. Wherever you are today in the world, we thank you for joining us. Mormon Channel Weekly Edition is brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. To listen to this episode again, or if you'd like a copy for your personal use, please visit us at mormonchannel.org. There you can download this episode, subscribe to our podcast, and listen to many other programs we offer right here on the Mormon Channel. Also, we remind you to log on to mormonchannel.org to watch special weekly edition videos about both the Wyatts and the Seminary Centennial. They are there right now. Now, if you have a story you'd like us to cover, please email us at mormonchannel@lds.org. We'd love to hear your ideas. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. We hope you have a great day.